Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to this sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of this sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert, and I'm here with my co-host Karosh, and this is the Dog Driver Show on Mushing. And today we have a guest calling in from New Hampshire. His name is Lindert Vandorp. He is a dryland musher up in New England. I know we met very briefly at the World Championships in Wisconsin a few months ago. Lindert, welcome to the show. How's it going today?
Oh, not too bad. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well. I'm looking forward to our conversation. I'm going to turn this over to KP so he can introduce you, and then we'll jump right into this.
Sounds good. I know Lindert mainly through Facebook and social media, of course. I didn't have the pleasure. Haven't had the pleasure to meet face-to-face or race each other or anything like that. He's in the East Coast region. Actually, that is the only area in the U.S. I haven't raced, quite honestly. So, Lindert, tell us a little bit about how you started in this sport originally, and then we're going to be talking about dry land and your races.
Okay. So, originally, I started as a handler for Mike and Luke Stiertsma up in Blythe, Ontario. That's where I grew up. And they took me training a few times. Here and there, and then they needed a handler for a race out in Michigan, Kalkaska Winterfest. So that ended up being my first race that I went to. And then, they took me to Bristol a few times and Halliburton. And then I went to the Halliburton World Championships to watch there. And then through them, I met my wife, Brittany, and the rest kind of history.
When was that? What year was that, Leonard?
2016, Kalkaska 2016 was my first race.
So you've been in the sport around 10 years right now, correct? And to our listeners, you're originally from Canada, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And so if I'm not mistaken, Christmas, they have Siberian Huskies, correct?
The Stiertsmas, they also run the Eurohounds.
Okay,
yep.
They also have those. And you started with them specifically on dry land or Kalkaska? I know that it's a winter festival, or right away on sled?
Really just as a handler. So it started with dry land training, like on the ATV. And then Mike let me run a sled once or twice on his property. But mostly just with training. And then they did take me to Bristol dry land at the end of October. And then there was a local dryland race, McGregor, run by the Sasso Club in Ontario. And that was my first time actually racing, I think. That's when I borrowed a dog. And so dryland, I guess, was my start to racing.
And racing dryland, tell us a little bit about the equipment, things that you do, and how you prepare and what it is. A lot of our listeners are not actually dog mushers. Tell us a little bit about how it's done.
So dryland's just mushing dogs on, say, dirt or sand or whatever is that you're not on snow. So to get the dogs ready to train, we're kind of limited here with the trails that we have. We like to train with an ATV when possible, but due to like timing constraints and whatnot, we usually start our season with a scooter. So it's like a just regular scooter with big wheels, or a bike. And we also have a heavy training rig. So we start short mileage, 1 or 2 miles, usually out and back because we don't have a good turnaround. And then we start building up and up and up. And then by the end of October, we usually try to hit 4 miles. It all depends on the temperatures. Because the dogs, they run kind of hot, and they can't really sweat. So we usually try and run anything under 60 degrees. We try to follow the 120 rule when we can. It's just a good rule of thumb to go by. Yeah, so a lot of it's just bike and scooter to start off with, and then heavy training rig, and then when we get the chance, we run ATVs.
So how many dogs you and Brittany you have in your program, in your kennel, including puppies and retired ones?
If you also include the Chihuahua, it'd be 22. We have about 3 retired dogs and then currently 3 puppies. So that leaves, 15 race dogs.
And both of you guys, you race, right?
Yeah, both of us race. Yeah, primarily in 6-dog class. We tried to run an open team a few years ago, but it's kind of hard to get the mileage here because there's a lack of snow, and we just ended up almost destroying the dog's feet by trying to get the mileage in.
Yeah, and then in dry land, what about those classes? You do bike, scooter, all of those? What do you do on dry land usually?
Basically all the things. We have a 3-wheel Togo rig that we run. At the World Championships, we had to borrow a Wolftrack 4-wheel rig due to the rules and stuff there. So we do run rig classes. We both run the bike class and scooter as well, and then I canicross as well. We try to run as many dogs as we can, so that's why you end up running so many classes. And because we have so many dogs, we're usually quite busy at dryland races, but... yeah, I don't know. We do basically everything.
Welcome to the Mushing Podcast. It's time for another memorable moment in mushing history. Sponsored by Peak Experience, providing experiential and team-building courses.
From May 1972, Roger Reitano of Alaska, one of the few movie stars among the mushing ranks, Jean Bastien of Quebec, took a crack at it a few years back, said that the film in which he plays the part of Eli Zaire will be released this coming November. If I remember right, the movie is about the RCMP hunt for the Mad Trapper, an outstanding manhunt in the Mountie historical annals. Roger neglected to mention the title of the film. Understand that as well as being an exciting movie, it also has some good dog team shots.
Tell us a little bit about your dogs. What are the lines behind those dogs, the sizes, male, female, ages approximately? What is the ultimate dog in your eyes?
I think we have a pretty even split, male to female. A bunch of our females are spayed just because it makes life a little bit easier, and we've won neutered male. The size, our males are typically 70-ish pounds. The females, 55-ish pounds. The lines, we have like Old Bailey. That's New England lines around here. Old Bailey lines. And then we recently bought in Marco Anurive dog that we bred to. And then a little bit of Dagenais and Parity racing is all part of what we have in our kennel.
So meaning the lines from Eastern Canada, then Quebec and Eastern Canada, and Eastern
Canada. We have a fair bit of that. Yep.
Very good. And you mentioned 70 pounds for a dog. These are obviously bigger, more powerful athletes. And is that what you're needing? At what you're targeting for dry land?
For the males, I guess it's the bear dogs, they do quite well. However, all of our good lead dogs are like the 55 pound females. They really drive in front of the team and they get the boys to chase them pretty well. This past fall, we ran 2 4-dog rig teams basically. So 1 4-dog rig team in the 4-dog class and 1 4-dog rig team in the 6-dog class. And, both our teams had 2 big 70-pound males in the back and then 2 smaller 55-pound females in the rear. And we're winning both classes and we're within about 10 seconds of each other. So it's you need the speed and the smarts up front, and the females tend to bring that. And then the big power in the back of the boys.
And I'm assuming these dogs are mainly specialized in the monosport and dry land races, shorter coats and better tolerance for heat. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. After bringing in like the Marco and Andy Ruvay lines, they were a little heavier on the Alaskan. So they are more team dogs. We try and start them all as individuals. So that's the way we start puppies, by dragging chains and stuff and just getting them confident in what they do. So they, most of them can lead and most of them can do single mono sport stuff, but we don't necessarily focus on that. A lot of them are still team dogs, but a lot of them can also lead. So we kind of try and be well-rounded.
And do they have a certain age that you're targeting to bring them to the peak of their career?
Not really a certain age to bring them to the peak, just try and keep them going for as long as they can, I guess. Most of our dogs run until they're eight, nine years old. I guess the more natural peak comes around 2 years old. So that kind of worked out for us with the World Championships. We had two yearlings that were too young to run at the Continental Championships last year, and they were eligible to run this year, and I think that made a difference in our team being on the podium this year versus last year.
What is the age limit for those dogs to enter World Championships or the International Championships?
18 months old is the IFSS rule. So our dogs at the time were 16 months old, so 2 months shy of being eligible to run.
Before we start to talk about your recent championship you had in Minocqua, let's talk about how you prepare your season. On a regular year, let's say 2025, tell us how you start, when you start, how many times a week, and what you do and how you get your team and your dogs to where you want to be during the season, starting when?
So when temperatures typically start to get cool enough around here, September. We try and just run dogs whenever we can. We have run dogs in August in the mornings when it's real cold. But usually it's September. This year we tried a little extra hard to get more runs in. So we were running dogs before work when we could, and on the weekends, early weekends. I don't know. Yeah, I got kind of lost.
So basically just two trainings a week, or no, you have a regiment of, my regiment is Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and rain and shine, except now that we have horrible weather, but, what is yours?
So I guess, early in the season, we train whenever we could. So like I said, it was like before work, whenever we could. So not all the dogs were running every single day of the week. But say, we'd start on Monday. I'd run dogs, a group of six dogs Monday before work. Brittany works overnight, so Brittany would come home Tuesday morning. I'd have dogs ready for her. She'd run a group of six dogs Tuesday morning. He'd run a group of six dogs Wednesday morning. And then Thursdays, we'd usually have a day off. And then Friday, I would run the group of dogs. And then Saturday, Sunday, we would all go out together and run dogs in the rig to have him actually run as a team. So we ended up running 6 days a week in order to get ready this fall.
So you split the chores and the trainings between you and Brittany then?
Yeah.
Very good. And you have a kiddo too, right? So you have to watch him too, right?
Yeah. And that's kind of why we have to split it up. And then we're both home on the weekends. And so he comes with and trains on the weekends.
So you have to place all of that between work, family, and the dogs and the responsibilities, right?
Yeah, no, it ended up being quite a handful. We were kind of burnt out after the World Championships were done. But, we were just trying to get as many runs of the dogs as we could. So that's why we ended up running so often.
And who does majority of the chores in the yard, in the kennel, with all the 22 dogs?
It's split pretty evenly. I'm typically the one feeding in the mornings. And then Brittany will feed at night before she goes to work. So it's pretty 50-50.
And what type of setup do you have at home? Do you have, do you live in a rural area, more of an urban setup? Do you have trails from home? Do you have to truck up and go to a track?
We're more rural. We're about 6 miles out of town. We do have the local training, spot behind our house. But we do have neighbors nearby, so if we leave dogs at home, they're pretty loud. So we do load up, and we just drive 5 minutes down the road to go train. So that's kind of nice. Our kennel setup, the real short-haired dogs are in the house, the ones that don't weather quite as well. And then the more heavily Alaskan dogs are outside in that kennel. They're all end up in twos, and they have nice dog houses.
Okay, so you split between indoor and outdoor for the dogs then?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. I've looked at your dogs and what your setup is. I see that some of them are the typical Eurohound, the bigger males, with a lot of muscles and everything, and some of them they have a little bit more hair. What is your preferred format of an athletic dog?
The Eurohounds, people really like those because they are nice and sleek. But some of our more, hairy dogs have kind of surprised me. They also have the speed and the endurance to keep up with the dry land stuff, and seems like they still handle the heat quite well. They just get acclimated to it, especially when we do the trainings early in the season with the higher temps. I like any dog that runs nicely, yeah.
Very good. It seems like more and more we have dry land events because of our, weather format changing. And do you think we will see more and more the dry land format and the dry land racing and less the winter event in the areas where you're at?
Unfortunately, I think that's probably right. That's kind of the way we've been going. When I first initially moved here, we raced more winter races. We'd have 6 or 7 winter races. Now, last year, we were limited to just 4. And then we ended up doing, 7 dry land races. So we have been shifting more toward dry land in order to get the dogs ran. And it's just still going to mount racing. It kind of seems to go that way.
So your wife, Brittany, she is a vet. Do you think her being in the, animal care and animal health business helps you performing better with your team? I mean, do you follow a diet that she sets up for the kennel or a supplement or vitamin regimen or any type of different program?
I think it does make my life a lot easier because, I don't think about it. We don't really follow anything that too crazy, we just feed dry kibble mixed with canned food and stuff. We were feeding raw, but with the little one running around, we don't want the little one getting in the raw food that often, so we did cut out the raw, and the dog still seems to be doing fine. For vitamins and supplements, she does take care of all that, so they are on joint supplements and then probiotics and a couple other vitamins to keep them going. She has it figured out quite well. I just follow the instructions.
That's good. You want to keep the wife happy with her decisions. Definitely. So what type of kibble do you feed? Just out of curiosity, what if a big male, how many cups or how many grams of dry and raw dog food do they get?
So we were feeding in Nookshook, 30-25, whatever it was. We were feeding in Nookshook initially, and then when the tariffs came into effect, we tried to find something U.S.-based. So now we're feeding native, which is native level 4, which is a 30-25 mix. The big males, they typically eat around 4 cups a day, 2 cups in the morning, 2 cups at night. And then when we were feeding raw, we never really fed that much. They get maybe, 200 grams of meat morning and evening. So it was never really that much. We typically mostly fed dry kibble.
Very good. Very good. Okay, let's change gear and talk about the Minocqua race you did. And tell us about what you did, what classes, what results you had, and how the event went overall for you.
So I ran in the men's elite canicross as well as the four dog rig and the six dog rig, and my wife ran in the six dog rig class. In the men's elite canicross, I finished in seventh. In the four dog rig, I finished in second, and then in the six dog rig, I was fourth, and I think Brittany finished also seventh, I believe, if I remember correctly.
So how was the event? I mean, just tell us about the fun, the stress, everything about this event, because obviously it is not the typical local race that you go to and you participate.
No, that's right. That was my first IFSS World Championship event. It was set up quite well. It was quite busy. I mean, but they did a good job spreading out the events throughout the couple days. I was typically, when I go to a dry line event, I'm used to running all my classes in at once over both days, but it was nice to spread them out a little bit. I still had to run canicross and my four dog rig team on the same day, which is fine. I mean, they're separate events and one's a little less taxing on the body. But it was nice being able to run the four dog and the six dog on separate days. So that let me run my four dog team in the six dog class as well. So they ended up running 4 days in a row. Overall, the event was a lot of fun. The organization was pretty great. It was nice to see so many people from other countries and see how they competed. I guess it was fun running for Canada, even though I still live, or like I am living in the U.S. That was kind of fun. It was just nice to meet everybody there and have such a high level of competition here, local.
Well, in dryland, thing that, of course, it's very, very noticeable is the number of different categories. We have, on a sled, as you know, it's like a 4, 6, 8 and open. That's it. And on dry land, you see so many different categories. And I'm assuming is mainly for the physical fitness of the drivers, because they have per age, per number of the dogs, what are your thoughts about that?
I think they're doing a pretty good job separating the classes. The rig classes are all just combined into one, which makes sense because that's really the dogs doing the work. It's like being on a sled. You can't really ask the juniors to compete with the elite people in like the bike chore or like the canicross classes, because there's an actual physical advantage to being older and bigger and stronger. And then again, it goes to the master's classes, and then it's better to separate them as well. As you get older, you do slow down, so it's a little nicer to separate the older classes from the younger classes. And then separating them by gender, obviously. And then, you have like the 1 and 2 dog classes. Those are all separated, the 1 and 2 dog scooter. Because having 2 dogs, you're obviously faster than having 1 dog, and that takes a toll on the driver as well, which the driver helps out and whatnot. There really are quite a variety of dry line classes.
Yeah, Robert, do you recall how many classes they had?
I don't recall the classes. I know that there were well over 220 participants. Like Lindert said, spread out over almost a week, several classes a day. I think we went on nonstop from about 8 in the morning till 1 or 2 p.m. Is that right, Lender?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, it was just in the afternoon, yep.
How many days were you there?
We were there we arrived Tuesday and we left that following Sunday. So it's 5 days, if I'm not correct. 5, 6 days.
And did you camp? A lot of Europeans, they do that usually, or a lot of, and actually you see more and more of that, the camping cars and stuff like that, or you stayed in a hotel?
No, we got an Airbnb. We were able to, the parking lot was quite tight in Minocqua. So at the Airbnb, we're able to set up a fence in the area and let the dogs free drop a little bit and let them stretch their legs a bit better. I know some people don't like to drive back and forth to a race, but we like to have our own spot where we can decompress and get ourselves together for the next day and whatnot.
Yeah, and overall, how many classes you and Brittany you participated in?
Between the two of us. I was in three classes and Brittany was in one.
Okay, very good. Would you do it again?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if I'd fly to Europe with a four-dog team, but maybe if I was by myself, I would fly with just one or two dogs. That would be more feasible. It would be fun to do it again, that's for sure.
All right, Leonard, I have a couple of questions I've been asking all of our guests over on our Mushing podcast, and I'm excited to ask these to some of our dryland guys as well. These are totally off the level of mushing. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. So the first one is, what is your favorite song or music artist?
Oh, song? I don't know. This morning on the way to work, I was in the Pink Pony Club, as funny as that is. It's not really what you typically think if you see me, but it's kind of a fun song. Kind of artists and stuff. I am into more heavy metal, so some Bad Omens. I don't know. There are too many to think of, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, Bad Omens is a good group. I've seen those guys a couple of times at festivals and Pink Pony Club for the song for sure. Next one, a little bit easier. Tell me one piece of gear you always have with you aside from your phone.
Aside from my phone, I do typically carry a Leatherman with me, I guess.
A Leatherman. Do you have a favorite model?
I got the Crunch.
Leatherman Crunch. Okay. Last question I have for you on this, and that is, what is your favorite snack, either on the trail when you're at a race or a road trip snack? You're pulling into that truck stop on a long drive. What are you picking up?
Haribo gummy bears seems to be a pretty good one for races. And I do like my chocolate bars, like Twix or Snickers.
Okay. All right. Hey, we appreciate you being on the show, taking the time to visit with us here on our new format with Kurosh and I. Take care, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
All right. On behalf of our guest today, this is KP and Robert for The Dog Driver. We will talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.